This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. A growing number of inmates is facing dying in prison. This is in part because of AIDS, but mainly it's the result of longer sentences and reductions in the use of parole, which are leading to the graying of the prison population. The number of prisoners age 60 or older in state and federal institutions is doubling every 4 years. And a few years ago, federal prisons stopped the practice of sending some old and terminal inmates home to die. Dying in prison and medical care for dying inmates is the subject of today's report by our prison correspondent Wilbert Rideau. He's the editor emeritus of The Angolite, the news magazine of the Louisiana State Penitentiary at Angola, where he's serving a life sentence. Louisiana is at the forefront of the trend toward tougher sentencing. Louisiana has had a policy of life sentences without parole for 20 years. Wilbert Rideau joins us by phone from Angola. Are there more people dying in prison now?
Yes, very much so. This primarily due to the fact that more people are in prison and more people are being kept in prison for longer periods of time. And they're getting older in prison. In 1978, the average age of Angola inmates was about 20. Today, half of the 4,600 guys here are over the age of 39, which I guess we're gradually turning into the world's largest old folks home.
Wilbert, is that something you notice all the time? Is that something you can feel that you've observed?
How can you avoid it? You look in the mirror. Hell, I'm 53 years old. I look all around me. Most of the prisoners I know, they've got gray in their hair, wrinkles in their face. They're old. It's a visible thing. You can see it.
What happens after death when somebody dies in prison?
Well, Tara, I talked to Assistant Warden Gary Frank, who handles all of this here at the prison.
Every inmate here has a emergency address, and we notify the next of kin. Either I will notify the next of kin. Normally, it's the chaplain's department notifies the next of kin. We talk to those individuals, either a wife, children, a mother, a father, and give them information about their son or husband or whatever, and they make decision whether or not to claim the remains. If they do claim the remains, then a funeral home does come up here and pick the body up here at the penitentiary. If they did not claim the remains, then the penitentiary will do the necessary things to ensure that the body is buried.
How many inmates were unclaimed last year?
We had 3 inmates that were unclaimed last year. Well, 1994.
Mm-hmm. And what do you do with the unclaimed remains? I mean, what do you do with them?
Well, it's the state's responsibility to ensure that the body is buried. We call several of the funeral homes in the surrounding area. We receive bids from the funeral homes, and we take the lowest bid. And the average cost this last year was around $600 per funeral that the funeral home charged us for the burial.
Okay. And what happens? Somebody come and pick up?
We do have a funeral home that comes and prepares the body for burial. The inmate is usually buried in his prison clothing. There's no special arrangements as far as clothing is concerned. A casket is prepared. The inmate is placed in the casket. We do have a cemetery here at the institution, and the inmate is buried at the institution. We do have a small graveside service by the chaplain's department. And on some occasions, we do have some of the friends of the inmate. We do allow them to attend the graveside service, and some of them participate in the funeral also.
And how large is your cemetery?
The name of the cemetery is Point Lookout Cemetery. The old cemetery has been filled, was filled probably within the last 6 months, and we've moved to another cemetery across the street. And this may sound a little gruesome, but I did an estimate and see how many people we could bury. Mm-hmm. In that cemetery, and we can bury over 2,000 people in the new cemetery. So that will last us for the years to come.
Okay. Well, you happen to have 2,400 inmates saving life here.
That's correct.
Is that in preparation?
No, it's not in preparation for all those people.
The bodies that go unclaimed, based on your experience, is it due to poverty or they just don't want?
Most of the people do not have the funds to defray the cost of the funeral. That is 99.9% of the problem. They do not have the funds to do that. And I imagine a funeral today will cost thousands of dollars in the free world, and they just don't have the money to do that. And I can understand that. And again, those people are very sincere about it. And we try to be as helpful as possible in this area, and I think we do a good job in that area.
That was Gary Frank, assistant warden at the Louisiana State Penitentiary at Angola, talking with our prison correspondent, Wilbert Rideau. Wilbert, do other prisons in Louisiana follow the same procedures as they do in Angola when taking care of funeral arrangements and burials?
I think they basically do. One thing they have in common is that other prisons utilize our same Point Lookout Cemetery for burying its inmates. Inmates are transported back to Angola to be buried here at the cemetery. However, there are some variations because while Angola makes a point of burying all of its inmates in at least some type of cheap casket, I saw one prisoner from another prison buried in a crude box built of recycled packing crate with the company's 800 number still on it.
Are lifers afraid of dying in prison? What does it mean to them?
Dying in prison is the convict's worst nightmare. I spoke to a prisoner here who's dying of AIDS in a prison hospital.
Who is he? Tell us something about him.
He's Alvin Howard. He's 51 years old. And he's been here since 1967, serving life for rape and murder. He's a maximum security custody inmate. And I visited him at the hospital, where he's kept in solitary confinement in a small room.
You're spending what's left of your life in a prison hospital. Could you describe what your life is like? Let me ask you, right now we're sitting in a cell. Normally you're locked in this cell, segregated from everybody else. Would you describe your cell for us?
Okay, the cell that I'm in right now is about 8'7". I'm locked in this cell 24 hours a day. I have a little shower in it, toilet, one face bowl, a bed, and because of the AIDS disease, they give me special bags to put my garbage in, special bags to put my laundry in. Whenever I get visitation, they put shackles on me, handcuffs me around my waist. Whenever I talk to anybody.
You're wearing shackles, handcuffs.
Yes, this is a prison rule. You know, if you're in maximum security, you got to wear this. But there are others, some guards who does it and some don't.
How are the medical personnel treated?
Well, the doctor, Dr. Burns, is my doctor assigned to the AIDS case. And yeah, I believe, you know, he had been doing what he could. But the nurse staff is tremendous, you know. They are that friendly way of smiling, asking, could they do anything for you, any help they can give to you, you know. And they help, they're helpful, you know. And if you're hurting, they'll try to get you a pain pill or something like that. They'll call the doctor, see what they can do, you know. But, you know, when you have AIDS, man, it's really not too much you can do. You can only depend on God for spiritual healing, I guess, you know. Other than that, you know, it is something that is known that will kill you, you know. There's been no proof of no one to recover from it yet, you know. Mm-hmm. No evidence, you know.
So there is a chance you may very well end up being left in prison and buried on Point Lookout.
A great possibility. Believe me, a very great possibility that I'll be buried right here in penitentiary. In other words, I would never leave penitentiary, not even in debt.
You ever dreamed of dying in prison?
Yes. In fact, there were times it's haunting me. Sometimes I've even seen my whole funeral. I could see myself laying in a coffin, you know, sometime, you know, and I wake up and sweat, you know, and it's like a nightmare, you know. And because it stays on your mind, the person, regardless of what he may say, that gun always stays on his mind. When he knows that he's close to one step to the graveyard, and if nothing can stop it, you know, really, you know, unless something, like I said, some miraculous spiritual healing, you know. It's about throwing the way out. And I wake up, man, sometimes sweating, and I done seen my porch, the funeral, you know, and there's always been no one there but a preacher.
Wilbert Alvin Howard seems to assume that he'll be buried in the prison cemetery, Point Lookout. Why does he assume that?
Well, according to what he told me, he's not in touch with his family. He doesn't have anybody who visits him, and so it's reasonable to assume that there's not going to be anybody to claim his body. Obviously, he doesn't expect there to be.
Alvin Howard does not want to be buried in the prison cemetery, Point Lookout. Do most prisons have prison cemeteries?
Most no, but there are 19 states that maintain their own prison cemeteries for the interment of, you know, unclaimed inmates. There are 10 other states that used to have cemeteries that they no longer use. But there's something about those systems that have prison cemeteries. They tend to, regardless of the individual differences, they tend to strive to give a measure of dignity to the burial of the inmates who died in their custody, complete with the formal funeral ceremonies at the grave site, as well as letting inmate friends and others attend the funeral services. But for other states, for a lot of the other states, it's just a matter of getting rid of an unwanted carcass that has disrupted their prison routine.
I'm speaking with Wilbert Rideau, who reports on life in prison for Fresh Air. He's the editor emeritus of The Angolite, the news magazine of the Louisiana State Penitentiary at Angola, where he's serving a life sentence. We'll be back after a break. This is Fresh Air. Joining us by phone is prison correspondent Wilbert Rideau. He's serving a life sentence at the Louisiana State Penitentiary at Angola. We're talking about dying in prison and the medical care of dying inmates. Would you describe the medical facility for us?
It's actually a very small infirmary with drab-colored walls. And there's two wards. There are two wards, one for ongoing medical treatment, and the other is more or less an old folks' ward where people more or less wait to die. One ward has 30 beds, the other 40. I talked to some of the nurses about caring for dying patients, like Alvin.
Let's hear what they had to say.
My name is Ella Lorena Fletcher. I'm a hospital administrator. I'm also a registered nurse. The patients and the nursing staff arrive at a kind of mutual accommodation space, if you will. Mm-hmm. They each learn about the other when the patient is in the dying process. So there's a little give and take, more so probably with a patient who's dying than there is with somebody who comes in for a short period of time and gets well and gets discharged out into the general population. So the nurses probably are closer to the dying inmates than they are to those who are not, by virtue of the fact that there's no real danger to the nurses in becoming a little bit closer to a person who will die.
Stacy Kent, I'm a registered nurse, and I'm employed as assistant director of nurses at Angola. You see the an extreme in every direction. Every person reacts differently to death and to dying. I've seen many inmates who wouldn't talk at all. They didn't move through the grief process as they should have, and that may be one of our faults here in prison, is that we don't have psychologists or social workers that are with them and help them move through the grief process. But many inmates won't speak at all about it, and there are some that you can't shut them up with a bullet. That they're going to talk, you know, until the end. And I think that's bound to be what's best, as long as you can verbalize, even if it's just with the nurses. And we're not psychologists, we're nurses, but I think it helps that we're there for a sounding board.
My name is Shirley Cavan. I'm a registered nurse. I'm the head nurse on the inpatient unit at the Hospital of the Louisiana State Penitentiary. I worked here once before for about 5 years, and I've been back since about 6 months now. The difficult thing about taking care of patients is, as a nurse, I'm a toucher. Mm-hmm. And in a prison setting, you can't go sit down on the bedside and talk to your patient or pat them on the shoulder or, you know, do things like that for fear of it being misconstrued. They seem to die a little with less fight than I've seen on the streets. They don't. Some of them, I've seen a couple that have been kind of angry, but the majority of them just seem to be more accepting, or sometimes you wonder if maybe they don't really understand that they're really terminal patients. The last time I was here, there was a man on the ward that died, and I was very sad because he had been very protective of me. Mm-hmm. When we'd get inmates on the ward that would act up, he'd go shake his finger and say, "You can't treat Miss Cavan that way." And when he died, it bothered me.
Mm-hmm. Wilbur, for prisoners who are dying, does the prison make any distinctions between prisoners who have behaved very well over the years and those who have not?
No. They're all going to die in the same place. They're all treated pretty much the same. The only thing that good behavior over the years will get you is perhaps maybe some officer might do you a little extra favor and let you get something extra that you shouldn't have gotten, that's not being given to somebody else who he doesn't like. It boils down to individual relationships. But insofar as the prison operation making a difference, regulations accommodating or extending some extra benefit or a little mercy or favor or whatever to people who are dying, no, that's nothing. It's, you know, this is you just die. You're just like anybody else. You just die.
Wilbert, have you known a lot of people who have died in prison?
Yes, too many. In fact, more than I can recall, more than I even want to recall. I've seen too many people die.
What was the last funeral you attended at Angola?
The last funeral I attended was that of Calvin Clark, a gay inmate who was rather popular. He had a lot of friends, and all of them were, not all of them, but a contingent of trusty inmates, along with Calvin's brother, were permitted to attend his funeral. I took the tape recorder with me.
An old rusted white bus is already here, probably what they use to transport the grave diggers. Chaplain Simon has just rolled up in an old white Ford. Three security officers are present, aside from one bus driver who brought us trustees. Okay, here comes the hearse behind us. That's fast.
Yeah, it was.
Warden Frank is out here. Eight big stripers are standing at the head of the grave against the white fence. Security officer just told him to back up, go around the mound of dirt.
Lord, the brothering I declare unto you, the gospel of our Lord and Savior Jesus Christ, that gospel that I preached unto you, whereby ye are also saved.
Bring it.
Keep in memory.
Three inmates serving as pallbearers. We carry a cheap, gray coffin. They set it atop the grave.
I have delivered unto you, first of all, that which also I received, how that Christ died for our sins according to the Scriptures.
A prison funeral recorded by Wilbert Rideau. He's our prison correspondent and editor emeritus of The Angolite, the news magazine of the Louisiana State Penitentiary at Angola, where he's serving a life sentence. He's also co-editor of the anthology, Life Sentences. His report was produced by Naomi Person with Nancy Updike. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.